Inspiring stories to ignite the next generation.
From the Perse School, Cambridge.
Is TikTok just a bit of fun? An easy scroll to waste away some time after a day at school, or perhaps zone out from an annoying sibling? Maybe you genuinely care about what influencers are using or buying, or maybe you just want to be entertained for a moment or an hour or even longer. Well, today's guest, Joanna, was recently selected to take part in a prestigious TEDx talk where she focused on TikTok and its influence on politics and young people. I'm really pleased to welcome you here today.
Hi, nice.
Tell me a bit about your research and your presentation.
So it started when I was scrolling on my phone, relaxing, like you were saying, and I noticed quite a lot of digital influencers were actually politicians. So suddenly I was scrolling through and Matt Hancock appeared on one of my videos, Nigel Farage on another one. And I started to think, what's the impact of seeing these very important politicians in such a casual setting, in a setting we're not used to seeing, where they're lip syncing to songs or where they're ranking chocolate biscuits? And how does that change the political world as we know it?
This year is quite a unique year because over 1.5 billion people around the world will have the opportunity to go to the polls to vote in national elections. So in this like record-breaking year, your research is even more relevant than ever.
Yeah, exactly. I think with the US and UK elections, TikTok can certainly be a device that politicians will start to use. I know I've already seen Trump and Joe Biden edits going around. And I think especially when we're getting a rise of two very distinct parties, TikTok's very key in polarising different groups, and things like edits, things like discussions around that online are really key in both opening up the conversation, but also through algorithms polarising it.
You did some research on algorithms in TikTok and how different they are to other social media.
Yeah, so TikTok's algorithm is much more complex. It doesn't just look at what you're liking, but it looks at what the people you follow are liking in certain areas, how long you've watched a video, whether you're reusing sounds and what other videos have been posted under that sound or under that audio. So every action within the app sort of comes in a cumulative way to form a For You page, which is your ideal content. And I think the risk here is that previously we have had political sort of satire. We've had Would I Lie to You? That was the week that was, but we've never seen such sort of subtle, subconscious political messaging before. And I think it's really important that we learn how to deal with that and perhaps even learn how to regulate it if needed.
I think on your talk, I remember you saying that 75% of 16 to 18-year-olds are using TikTok at least once. Mm-hmm. So in the run-up to elections, all those kind of subtle, subconscious messages are going to be consumed in a way that maybe young people aren't actually aware of.
Yeah, and I mean the impacts of it, especially on US politics. In my talk, I mentioned that a Trump campaign rally at Tulsa was almost sort of hijacked when a user went viral suggesting people book tickets and forgot to show up. And actually, about over a million seats were RSVP'd. It had a stadium capacity of 20,000 and 6,000 people showed up. And it really shows just how this is an app where not just politics is talked about, but that interaction online relates into in-life action. And I think with the upcoming elections, seeing how the younger generations are responding to figures is really key in looking at what the political world looks like, not just now, but also in the future.
What are you seeing amongst your friends?
I think it's quite a lot of people just going, oh, it's just absurd at the moment. And to some extent, I think that sort of online political absurdism. So I reference in my talk one example, which is where war edits are made comparing Zelensky and Putin in all aspects, going as far as physical attraction, which is completely different from how my grandma certainly saw the political world. For her, no matter what politicians were doing, you would sort of treat them with some respect, you know, as a well-respected position. And now we're seeing that shift towards, you know, Liz Truss and a cabbage outlasting her and all of these jokes. And yes, whilst it is reflecting the fact that the political world does feel like it's getting more and more absurd, I also think there's a danger that in doing so, we forget that these are real life figures whose policies have real life implications, and we need to be really, really careful to not just reduce them to sort of jokey online influencers.
With so many young people voting for the first time this year, what would your message be to them as they're trying to weigh up perhaps who to vote for?
I think it's difficult. I've got quite a lot of friends who have turned 18, who are saying, well, I just don't know who to vote for, so I'm not going to vote. And I think no matter what, you're going to get somebody, quite frankly. And not voting isn't a form of protest. It's just not allowing your voice to be heard. So I think not voting on the basis of something you see on TikTok, but really looking into what that party stood for in the past, what your MP of the area has voted for in previous votes, and really making sure the decision comes from an educated thing and not thinking that your vote can't make a difference. Because if everyone thought that, you know, we'd have quite a different situation.
Coming back to your research and then your presentation as part of the TEDx talk, the Perth School puts a lot of emphasis on the importance of students learning good research skills, how to analyse material, things like that. In what ways has the Perth supported you with those research skills that then you were actually able to use in practice putting your talk together?
So I think the most helpful one was the Rouse, which is a long essay project we do. And I did mine on political democratisation in South America. And certainly having to go through articles and think, just because they're telling it this way, is that the way it's portrayed? And then you could go over to BBC News and you start seeing very different headlines, and you go back to JSTOR, and again, data is interpreted in such different ways. But I think it's still there and I'm still aware I'm consuming it. And I think really making sure, even when we're on apps like TikTok, we remain aware. I think the constant scrolling motion, it's very easy to zone out. I've had friends say, oh, I had no idea, I just spent 3 hours on it. So I think just sort of checking in, fact-checking every once in a while and just thinking, is this exactly how events are?
And the process of actually delivering your TEDx talk, what was that like?
It was quite a lot of work. I think the original night I decided to apply, funnily enough, it was also my history coursework deadline. So I think it was very busy and it was a last-minute decision. And I sent it in and Sergio, one of the organisers, said, you know, we really love this idea. We'd love to hear a bit more. And it was only once I'd sent in that initial idea that I really thought, I think there's something here. I think this is really quite important and something that should be talked about. So from there, it was just sort of figuring out how, especially since due to copyright laws, we were quite restricted in what media we were allowed to show, how to communicate what was going on in TikTok. You know, I can't show scrolling videos of somebody dancing and then it going to war footage, but it's communicating that to an audience, which I think is really important.
And what kind of feedback and response have you had since you did the talk?
I've got a lot of positive responses from friends and friends saying, I think I never realised before quite how influenced I was being by, you know, seeing all of these edits on TikTok, seeing such polarising content online and perhaps not quite being aware that just because you're not explicitly interacting with political material doesn't mean that an algorithm can't take something from that about your political views. You know, just because you don't like a video on of Donald Trump doesn't mean that through an algorithm they can't sort of form a cumulative idea of what your beliefs are. I think my parents were my biggest critic, but again, I think it was constructive criticism throughout the whole process. I think the amount of drafts I printed off with my parents, I think we probably used up quite a lot of printer paper, but it was helpful.
It's lovely that your parents supported you though and came and watched you. And
yeah, exactly. And I think it's always very hard when you're doing it, when you do it so much. By the end, you sort of, it becomes more like something, not you've memorised, but it feels very repetitive. And I think having my parents who could constantly look at it with that sort of fresh view and tell me how it was going was really, really helpful. And they were really lovely about it.
Would there be a part two to your research now?
I think I'm interested in what next. So I sort of allude to it at the end of the talk, but I don't believe, when I say TikTok's an app of the future, I don't believe it is the app of the future. I believe it's sort of tells us what the future will look like MySpace and like so many other apps of the time. I'm sure people thought in the time this is going to last forever, and not many apps do. We can even see that amongst sort of the declining use of Facebook amongst my generation. So I think it's really important to think, what does this show us on a wider political level? And really not just that, but what steps can we take to address this? Because it's well enough saying there's a problem, but the key is, what's the solution then?
That's really interesting because as a mum myself, I won't let my daughter have TikTok yet, although she's constantly asking me for it. Should parents really be worried?
I think it's always important to know to some extent what your kids are consuming. I remember when I first came to my mum with the idea of the talk, she was just like, well, I didn't know there was political material on TikTok. But again, there are an increasing number of BBC News articles about it, especially in relation to the Israel-Gaza conflict and looking at how that's being portrayed on TikTok. And I think there are age restrictions in place for a reason, and especially when there's such a potential for polarisation. Yeah, I think having that minimum age requirement and being quite strict on that is important too.
Coming back to your talk and its influence on young people and politics, you mentioned the elections in the US this year, but we also have big general election in this country that we're expecting. How do you think in the UK TikTok will influence young people?
Quite a lot. I've already seen, and to some extent I was checking that just because I'm engaging with political discourse, people who aren't are also getting these messages, because I didn't want to find that I myself had fallen into one of those sort of very niche wormholes of the internet. But even the other day, me and my friend were watching TikTok on her phone and a video came across from Tesco showing the different prices and going, really, Rishi? And you can see just how things like this influence. Okay, so Rishi Sunak is perhaps the cause of the inflating prices. Let me sort of lean away from that view. And how little videos with audios can have such a sort of subconscious influence on who we vote for. Similarly, I saw when David Cameron came back into office recently, there were quite a lot of edits of him returning, which actually quite glorified him. So I think it's not as simple as saying that it will turn young people away from the Conservatives or anything like that. I think it's much more nuanced, but it is having an influence on how people perceive parties and their policies.
Do you think TikTok will be a really key political platform for this election that we'll expect later this year?
I don't think politicians have quite got to the point themselves where they know fully how to utilise it yet. I still think we're seeing this generation of politicians, at least, who haven't necessarily fully grown up with technology, really using it. But amongst certainly a couple of the younger MPs, I know Zara Sultana is one for Labour who uses it quite a lot, are starting to figure out how to use it. So I don't necessarily think for this election it's going to be completely relevant amongst politicians, more amongst youth, but certainly for the upcoming ones after the next few terms, I think we can really expect to see political messaging both from the youth and from the politicians.
I'd like to ask you a little bit about you now. Obviously, you've got a real interest in research. Tell me a bit about you and what you hope to go on to do after you leave the purse.
Yeah, of course. So I'm interested in international relations, and a special interest of mine is South America. I think quite often I read a book called The Forgotten Continent. We tend to sort of push it under the rug. And now with the news, it's very big focus on China and Russia and the countries that perhaps more divisive again. But I think there's real interest with like Bolsonaro in Brazil to see what that region can tell us about politics. And I'm really interested in perhaps going further into that and looking at that.
That's really interesting. I actually worked in Brazil in my 20s. I lived in a favela in Sao Paulo. And I actually remember even then thinking, gosh, I'm working with these children who are living in a favela, surrounded by high-rise flats that were, you know, the equivalent of like a million each. There is a great need there, like you say, in terms of the political situation.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I recently was on a train and I got talking to a English teacher who had done her year abroad in Chile. And she was saying something similar, which is, you know, you get so used to living in a certain way. And I think it really takes a year abroad or something quite different to shift your perspective. Certainly reading and research is key in making sure that we can see things from other people's perspective. But I don't think there's anything quite like living and really experiencing a different culture in their country.
Do you hope to get that opportunity during your degree?
Yeah, so I've applied for a year abroad in a couple of courses, and I think it'd be really cool to go over and do something. I took a Spanish qualification in language, so I'm looking forward to hopefully as well trying to get slightly better at Spanish.
I'm sure you will.
Yeah, exactly. I think living in another country is the fastest way to learn the language, really. So.
And brilliant for your career in international relations as well.
I mean, my dad's Greek, even though I don't look it at all. So I think I just find, you know, from a young age, I've read so much about how the UK as a country looks at other countries and how we sort of absorb that. And I think when I hear my Greek relatives talk again, I think, oh, I hadn't thought of it from that perspective. And hearing about different news from a UK angle versus international angle is really interesting.
That's something that really stands out about you, actually. You seem very thoughtful looking at things from different perspectives.
I mean, to some extent, it's always hard to fully separate an inherent bias we have and apply that, and whether we actually can is a debate. But I think it's so important, like I say, especially in Cambridge, which can become a bit of a sort of bubble, to really make sure you think about not just how I see it, but how are other people seeing it, and not necessarily judging or thinking it's unreasonable. Just like I form my beliefs in some way, shaped on my upbringing, I think that we can't assume that others haven't done the same and judge them for that.
Ioana, do you have any words of wisdom finally that you can share with others from what you've learned so far?
I think probably the main thing, and I reiterate this at the end of my TED talk, is really just in a constantly developing, modernising world, with technology being as rapidly innovative and new as it is, I think it's really important that we just apply caution before we engage with things or necessarily straight away believe things. Just thinking, is this sounding genuine? Fact checking it and absorbing information from a range of sources. I think the danger with TikTok is that you really end up just hearing one thing with an algorithm that's very catered towards you. So I think just really making sure that we're thinking about things from as many views as we can and researching as much as we can.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.